Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we engage in lively and thoughtful conversations with professionals in the nonprofit world. And I'm Janice Cunning, and I'm here with my partner, Margaret Katz-Kan, and we are welcoming back to the podcast a repeat guest, Emma Luzzi from Blue Sky Philanthropy. Welcome, Emma.
Thank you, and thanks for having me, Janice and Margaret.
Yeah, so yeah. I was looking, Emma, you were on way back episode 62, and we were talking, it was David and I, and we talked with you about ways to manage up. So we'll link to that if people want to listen to that as well. But today we're going to talk about introverting your way to fundraising success.
Love it. One of my favorite topics.
Yes. And I know you just came back from out west in Canada and you were at a conference talking about this. So that when I heard that you were doing that, I was like, oh, well, then we got to get a blog and a podcast with you.
Yeah. And it was great. It was actually great to bring these ideas to a group because it was quite interactive and workshop style. So it was really helpful to hear back from other introverts who are fundraising and leading. And it actually gave me some really good crowdsourced ideas too that I will share with you in our conversation today.
I love this topic. And, you know, you say, well, many of us who have done some reading about introversion and extroversion, you know, start to understand how stacked so many parts of our culture are towards extroverts and towards those words that we use to describe extroverted people. And you really kind of double click on how true this is also in fundraising and leadership in the nonprofit world. And would love to hear more, you know, what are you noticing? What did you want to elevate?
Yeah, no, that's great. It's interesting. And I mean, I'll share a bit of my story first, because I feel like for so many years, I called myself a reluctant introvert, right? Because I kept hearing and understanding sort of what all of these alleged attributes of introverts were, like we're shy, we're quiet, right? We're not social, we don't like networking. And for me, I didn't necessarily identify with all of those. So I feel like for many years, that coupled, this sort of misconceptions about introverts coupled with this extrovert ideal. We were talking a little bit before we hit record about Susan Cain's great book, Quiet. And I think she coined this term, the extrovert ideal. And this is the idea essentially that, you know, especially in dominant culture, in North American culture, a lot of the attributes of extroverts are very, very favored. And I think that is particularly true when it comes to fundraising, and we see it show up in all sorts of ways. Very interesting to me often to see it showing up in job descriptions, for example, in this idea of a fundraiser, you know, in the words that we're using to describe the ideal fundraiser being, you know, outgoing, being, you know, being able to work a room, being, you know, outspoken, being able to speak off the cuff, for example. So it's very interesting to see this. It shows up in everything from job descriptions to even how we tend to, for example, run our recruitment, run our interview process. Even the way our workplaces are structured are very much structured around extrovert preferences, the way extroverts like to work. So fascinating in the ways in which to see it start showing up. And I'm sure many listeners probably do identify with my experience in the sense of, well, you know I'm not an extrovert, but I also don't necessarily identify with the ways in which introverts are perceived and described. So now I want to interrupt here because it's interesting. We asked a question I want to get back to before we hit record. And before we came on, I said, introvert or extrovert? I'd love to hear, Janice and Margaret, which resonates most with you, each of you?
Yeah. Janice, do you want to go first?
Yeah. So you mentioned Myers-Briggs in the post, and I have done Myers-Briggs. And so I am an ENFJ. And I remember when I did it with a friend, and she was so on the cusp with three of them that it was meaningless to her. But for me, I was like, do you live in my house? I remember we were in this career transition class. And the woman said to us, like, highlight what you know, what resonates with you. And literally I was just like highlighting the entire paragraph. So, but the extrovert part for me, it's not very far over, you know, so it's a spectrum. If anyone who's done Myers-Briggs. And when I heard about the concept of ambivert, which I think I heard about from Daniel Pink, his books, that resonated much more with me, because I do think there's a way, you know, we like assessments, we use assessments in our coaching, but I don't like when people label people or put them in boxes. Like, I'm like, you just alluded to that, Margaret, like we're all complex and, you know, and it is a continuum, right? So, yeah. So I see both sides, or I feel like I sit in the middle on that. So that's me. What about you, Margaret?
Yeah. And so my experience of this was actually taking the quiz at the beginning of the book Quiet and being shocked actually to learn that I am so solidly an ambivert. Like if there were 20 questions, I was 10 extrovert and 10 introvert, you know, just, and it shocked me as a frontline fundraiser and as a person who grew up, you know, in both a culture and a family that really favored, like, I just thought I was an extrovert because I had to be. Mm-hmm. And then somehow I took this quiz and I thought, oh, that's why Friday nights, I will never go do anything outside of my house. You know, that's why I have a conversation ban after 8 p.m. You know, like I'm done talking. You know? Well, when I was working in fundraising, that was true. It was very enlightening. But it was also, as you say, it wasn't something I was going to, you know, put on a Facebook post. Like I had some very ambivalent feelings about the implications of it, based on how I had identified before that.
Mm-hmm. It makes so much sense. It's interesting what you raised about this idea of labels, because I too am quite resistant to that. I think what has, however, been useful for me in understanding that I'm an introvert is actually being able to work more effectively now. Because now I'm like, okay, I'm an introvert and I accept that. So I understand how to structure my days, you know, in terms of like maximum productivity. I also understand the importance of and the ways in which I need to recharge, which I know we're going to get to at some point, but recognizing this has helped me actually, I think, become a better fundraiser in a lot of ways. And I often, although I just said I resist labels, I often describe myself now as an introvert who has very strong extroverting skills. So I often describe when I am extroverting, it's an action or a skill that I'm implementing, but it doesn't mean I'm not an introvert. It's a set of actions or skills that I put to use when I need to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it brings up how often we can't tell, we don't know about other people from how they are behaving, right? Like we never know how somebody feels inside. We only see how people are behaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things I think that's so interesting about, and again, I don't know a ton about this topic, but my, you know, reading of the book Quiet is this idea of introversion and extroversion, which have been so labeled and mm-hmm. have so many implications, but really at their simplest are only about how we recharge, right? Or maybe it's a little bit more complicated than that, but an entry point to thinking about it is, you know, what do you want to do on Friday night? Which is why I mentioned that, you know, what, like at the end of a busy work week, what does your nervous system want to recharge? What, you know, so that's a nicer way to think about it than how we show up.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to me, and Emma, you tell me if this is true, but yeah, because I read Quiet too, and I found it helpful when I worked on a team to think about different styles. But I often think about it for some people, how they process information. So that's one way, like, as I said, like, I love, like, reading is my favorite thing. Like, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm the same with you, Margaret. Like, I really do like to be by myself or do quiet activities to recharge. But I can see my extrovert side just in, it's very hard for me to process thoughts like through writing or just sitting myself and reflecting. It's much easier to process what is happening with me by discussing with somebody. So that's often, I think, one of the hallmarks. Yeah. So it's sort of like how you process information. Yeah. Like what rebuilds your energy if it's been depleted? What else? Mm-hmm. Am I missing something?
I think, I think that's really important. I know oftentimes when I think of working with my extroverted friends and colleagues, exactly, like I describe an experience I had when I was working in a healthcare environment as a fundraiser, and we'd often have evening events. And at the time I'd love them and I'd love the chance to connect with donors. It was always the morning after that I noticed the difference between myself and more extroverted colleagues, where I would just have been depleted. Like I will have had fun. I will have been happy that I did it, but to be back in the office again, like at 9 o'clock the next morning without a little bit more time to like recharge and reset, I would find that challenging. Whereas my extroverted colleagues are kind of like bounding in all bright eyed and bushy tailed, because extroverts recharge often through social activities, right? So their batteries may have been, you know, may have been charged up by the event that happened the previous evening, whereas and we both performed like equally well, but mine would have been charged down and would have need to be charged up again, right? Ideally. So definitely like the recharging piece. And I think it's really worth coming back to what you said, Janice, just about also processing information, because this is one way I see this show up in workplaces, in a way that's not necessarily always supportive of introverts. Like let's say you're in a meeting context, introverts tend to, you know, be, and this is maybe where we got the reputation of being quiet. I am not quiet in any way, shape or form, but I do process and reflect. So I may actually be in a meeting and I might not be speaking, but because I'm thinking about what somebody said, what somebody else said, and I'm taking my time before I maybe make a contribution. When introverts do make that contribution, you know, it's often like thoughtful and valuable and has been thought through. So we do have those differences in terms of the ways that we process information and engage in meetings. And it's so important to know this, because sometimes you'll see this extrovert ideal show up in this way where it's like, well, you didn't contribute in that meeting, where it's not contributing. It's a different way of engaging and a different way of processing and a different way of contributing that we need to understand and recognize and value equally, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, you know, listening, especially thinking about, you know, the quieter people in the room, the people who actually, our experience with events and the toll that sort of noise and chaos has on us. And, you know, what are we missing with our donors who are introverts?
Such a good point. Yeah, that's a really great point to think about that, because yeah, especially in something like major gifts, if we're working with folks one-on-one or in those large group situations where it's true, extroverted donors are going to be thriving more in that group environment as well. So really great point. Really great point, even in our assumptions we sometimes make about how we steward with and engage our donors. We often go straight to like events and gatherings, and that is not necessarily the way in which donors want to be, you know, worked with or engaged. And I think this idea of introversion and extroversion is super useful, Margaret. It's a really great point for us to think about when we're thinking about working with our donors as well. It's very interesting. Extroverts and introverts can make amazing fundraising teams, like in terms of going out together. We also have to be cautious, right? It's very interesting. Even though the extrovert ideal exists and we think extroverts make better fundraisers, coming back to, for example, working one-on-one with a donor, introverts have a great strength around like really deep listening, and extroverts, we both have strengths and both have danger zones. This is where extroverts sometimes get into a bit of a danger zone, because they are verbal processors. They are talkers, which is great sometimes, but let's say you are meeting with a more introverted donor, or, you know, you're building a particularly sensitive relationship, you know, extroverts have to be cautious around that, just being really building those listening skills and sometimes saying, you know, like, okay, I'm excited, I have an idea, I want to talk, and just being able to self-monitor and self-manage around, for example, not interrupting a donor, you know, and allowing them time to sort of process and speak. So it's very interesting, like, to watch those dynamics. And I think it can be super effective when introverts and extroverts work together, and kind of recognize like how those strengths come to the fore, as well as the ways in which we have to just be mindful and self-aware around what some of our danger zones are, if that makes sense. So,
yeah, I was just thinking, because I used to work on a team and my boss and I would have been more extroverted. So we like to discuss things and talk through ideas and just, you know, kind of brainstorm, spitball. And the other two people on our team really preferred to like reflect. So when we would have our team retreats, like I learned a lot because it was helpful. Like they would give feedback where they wanted, you know, they really wanted like a clearer agenda ahead of time so they could be prepared. And if we were going to be trying to come up with new ideas, like we would always set aside time for everyone to write on sticky notes and have 10, 15 minutes to really, you know, and then we'd put things up and we'd all look at them so we could process kind of like, what are the themes that are emerging? Like, you know, what seems to be, oh, that idea has come up like three times, right? And so that to me was helpful because my boss and I actually consciously, like at one point we had a conversation and we're like, we could easily talk for this whole half day. You know? And then probably nothing would come of it because we'd just be like, blah, 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 you know? So it is like, it is, you know, it was, for me, it was kind of like really thinking ahead of time, like how do we craft a meeting where the four voices that we need are going to come out, you know, in the way that makes the most sense for everybody. So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. And that touches on another introvert strength. I don't think I wrote or spoke about too much, but this idea of being self-aware, it's part of like our, because we have a very rich internal life and there's a lot of, you know, reflection that goes on. That's a great strength for a lot of introverts, is this idea of like self-awareness and self-management in terms of being able to sort of step back and seeing what's happening in a room, observing like what the dynamics are, observing, for example, like very small, let's say we're in a donor meeting, just observing small body language clues, right? It's like body language, change in vocal tone, that sort of thing, which is a great strength when it comes to fundraising for sure, is this sort of observant nature, but also self-reflective nature to be able to self-monitor to some degree, which I think is important. Piece of the puzzle when it comes to effective fundraising and working well with others and leading as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You used this phrase that I loved in your post where you said, irresistible giving opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I love the irresistible giving opportunities. Yes. You know, I was talking a little bit about this idea, you know, if you're, when you bring all these strengths together and you're working with donors, where the magic really happens oftentimes is you're able to bring those strong, deep listening skills to the table when you're meeting with a donor. So you're asking really great questions, you know, you're understanding more about their values and their motivations. And then the next piece of that puzzle really is just figuring out is like, what are we doing in terms of our mission, in terms of our organization's work, that actually like aligns well, like where is that mutual alignment from a values perspective, from a, you know, where do we want to achieve change in the world perspective? And then those things all loan themselves really nicely to creating those irresistible giving opportunities, right? Those are all pieces of the puzzle. Just because your organization finds it compelling doesn't mean your donor is going to find it compelling. So using those skills to really understand the donor. And then one of the other great strengths that introverts have tends to be a skill around creativity. And one of those reasons that we're strong at that tends to be that internal life. We have strong imagination. So we're really good at kind of imagining the future and being creative. And those, when you bring them together, although introverts don't necessarily have a strong reputation for innovation, we, all those skills come together to make us quite innovative. So thinking about like creating or building that like creative, innovative, you know, giving opportunity is a great strength for an introvert for sure, because it just brings together all those things that we're quite good at. And yeah, that can end up resulting in, I know, I love that phrase too, an irresistible giving opportunity for donors. So it's another way that I think introverts can really leverage those skills to raise more money.
Yeah, I love your sort of naming. You know, there's always this push-pull in fundraising and development between, you know, the sale, right? Mm-hmm. And being salesy and asking for money for things that you care about, that your organization has told you that you need money for. And then like sort of at the other end of that continuum, just listening, you know, asking questions, getting to know your donors without it leading to an ask. And there's sort of this invitation, right? Like, where's the sweet space in the middle of those two ends of the continuum?
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of danger zones, this is interesting to me, right? Because I feel like sometimes because introverts do land so strongly on the side of relationship building, we also have to make sure that we are being really purposeful around getting to the ask, right? Because that's an, you know, you can do all the relationship building in the world. Right. And
people don't give till you ask them. Yeah. Exactly.
And at some point, but you know, I feel like introverts can go really confidently into the ask because you will, if you're using your strengths and your skills, you will have such a strong grounding and you will have built such a strong relationship. You're going to be asking for support from, you know, such a place of opportunity and strength and success, right? I always like to say, you know, let's just go back to this idea of opportunity, right? It's like sometimes, I don't know if you've ever worked with this donor, but sometimes a donor will be like, well, you know, thank goodness your organization finally asked me. I've been waiting, right? And we often think asking is an imposition, whereas it's, you know, it isn't at all. So I think I'm very interested in actually that. I'm very interested in mindset around fundraising, especially when it comes to major gifts. And we often will enter into like that ask phase or even the relationship building phase by thinking it's an imposition instead of an opportunity. And that's something that's good to be aware of. And I don't think that's specific to introverts or extroverts, but no. I think given the introvert's nature, again, we have to be mindful and self-aware and purposeful in using our skills, one of which is planning, in terms of kind of planning out what it looks like to get to the ask, because we don't want our donors saying, thank goodness you finally asked. I thought nobody was ever going to actually give me this opportunity to give, which is, you know, not unusual. It's very, people get have very complex feelings. This is a whole other podcast. People have so many complex feelings around money and around asking. So definitely is something we need to be mindful of for sure.
So yes, I would love to kind of talk about some of the ways to recharge, but I am curious, this question just popped in my head. Like, was there anything surprising to you when you were out west at the conference and you did the workshop?
Like, one thing I found interesting, I don't know if it was surprising, but we had a few folks join who said, I'm not quite sure where I land. Like, I'm not sure whether I'm an introvert or an extrovert. At the end of the workshop, most of them said, okay, I recognize myself now. I'm an introvert. But we also had, I found it very interesting. We also had a few folks say that they found themselves becoming more introverted during the pandemic. So it's sort of like the change in day-to-day behavior, or perhaps like the removal of a lot of the external stimuli has had people kind of reorienting themselves in terms of where they land on the introvert to extrovert scale. So I thought that was interesting. And perhaps, I don't know if I'd call it surprising, because I think it does make sense.
I've heard also, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard it and it sort of rings true to me that sometimes as we get older, we also move, you know, because again, it is a continuum, right? We're not static. So I can see that in myself, like the sort of, you know, like I made a move, you know, I'm 52 and I just moved from right downtown Toronto, you know, to the east end of the city. And my husband, who's a few years older and much more extroverted than I am, like, he's like, oh, I so like the quiet here. Right. Cause it's just, it's partly like stage of life. And I can see that, the pandemic for us, like really, you know, had us be much more close to home. And we liked it, you know, like we had more of a sense of, you know, after the first few months, when, you know, I thought I was going to like lose my mind because he was constantly like making up reasons to go out to the grocery store. Settle in.
Yeah. Like, oh, there's kind of this, right? Like this concept that we talk about in coaching of like things you can't be with. And I do think the pandemic had most of us sitting still and being with a whole bunch of things that we can't be with. And, you know, it makes me wonder, and not that we need an answer for this today. This is another podcast too, but
yeah, we've queued up more.
How much of like extroversion is sort of learned, not just because it's favored in our culture, but because it's a great way to stay out of sitting still, you know, that it helps us be avoidant. So
Good point.
I always remember, I remember in Susan Cain's book, how she talked about that, like, you know, with kids, that parents and in many cultures, if your kid went to a party and was sitting quietly reading a book, you'd think, oh, my child is so well behaved, I'm so happy. And a lot of times in North America, it's like, oh no, like
what's wrong with you?
My kid is, like too shy or an outcast, you know? So yeah, it's true. Like, it's sort of like where
my kid's sitting on the soccer field, blowing dandelions off their stems during the game. Yeah, exactly. Like, what's wrong? There. Or what's right? Yeah, we're not asking the second question.
And this is like the perfect segue back into this idea of recharging, because that's exactly what those kids are doing. Like, they're taking a little like micro break to recharge their introvert selves, right? And we kind of end up socializing that out of ourselves. So I think, yeah, I love revisiting this idea of recharging, because I think it's like, it's sort of this flip side I've been talking about it. I think it's really important that we recognize as introverts that we bring really unique strengths and skills to the table. And then the second part of that is, if we don't also recognize that we have unique needs around recharging, we can really end up being at risk of exhaustion and burnout. Now, I mean, everybody needs to recharge, but I think for introverts, it's particularly, you know, urgent and important that we're very purposeful about building in recharge time. So that was one of the fun things actually at the workshop I did, was we just talked about how everyone, you know, what everyone does to recharge. And there's very clear kind of commonalities around what introverts did to recharge. So I'm going to see if I can pull this from the top of my head. Reading, speaking of reading, was very high up there. Again, some internal activities like writing and journaling were also really important for a lot of introverts. The idea of having solo time, but actually like doing things like being out in nature, that's a big one for me, having time out in nature. Solo exercise is a big one as well. I actually just had a student message me this morning, because I've been talking about this a little bit in my emails, and she said, oh, you know, you forgot something really important, and that's like creative pursuits. And I said, yes, I feel like I've heard that from a lot of introverts, is this idea of creativity that looks sort of like either, whether it's crafting, whether it's art, whether it's maybe even cooking. Those are things that are good ways to recharge. I definitely heard from the group at the Western Canada Fundraising Conference about the value of meditation and mindfulness practices as well. A lot of them named that specifically as a recharge activity. And the thing that we talked about a lot also was that we can do these kind of things. It's like, while long breaks are important, thinking about actually fitting in these scheduling in these micro breaks to recharge during the day is a really useful strategy, especially if you're kind of in, as we sometimes we get into like marathon mode, right? Where we're either in busy year end season, or, you know, something's happening where we can't necessarily take those longer breaks. And, you know, research shows that micro breaks are very valuable for introverts and extroverts, just in terms of cultivating like that sense of well-being. So fitting in, even like consistently fitting in micro breaks throughout your day.
How long, Emma? How long is a micro break? 2 minutes, 15 minutes.
I don't know. Like, let's say you're like, I'm thinking something like people at the conference mentioned, even like, let's say I'm driving in my car somewhere to a donor meeting. I might take 10 minutes and just like, you know, do like a quiet meditation before I go in, or same thing, just to reset afterwards. Right. I think using our lunch breaks, like not our, this workplace culture habit of like eating lunch at your desk, right? Which, I mean, let's say so many of us have done. And again, it just is like, it's one of those, it's one of those things that's perceived to be like, you know, I'm dedicated, I'm working hard, but how is it actually adding to our contributions or our product? It's not, right? Our productivity, because probably we'll actually be much more able to contribute, whether we're introverts or extroverts, if we say step outside, take a little bit break, go for a walk around the block. So, you know, and I think, sorry, speaking of, I'm like third podcast idea, but I think it really brings up a really interesting, idea about like our dominant workplace cultures, right? And how are we normalizing the importance of like taking breaks and unplugging? And how are we as workplaces actually taking responsibility for the levels of burnout that we're seeing in our sector, right? So yeah. I'm sure this is something that's a topic that you, you know, see a lot in your coaching practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, as you know, we like to give people something to try. So I feel like there's a nice something to try in there. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you want everyone who's listening to do?
I like the idea, you know, I'm a big time blocker in terms of actually like using my calendar to schedule in what I want to get done. And I use time blocking to schedule in my recharge too. In fact, I'll often schedule in my recharge activities first to make sure that they don't end up being an afterthought. So, you know, I know not everyone has, you know, absolute control over their schedules, but the more you kind of pre-schedule in, especially if you have people booking meetings into your calendar, the more that you pre-block in those, you know, recharge breaks. So that would be my challenge. My challenge for folks will be, you know, time block out some time during your week, be really purposeful, and just decide on what you want to do to recharge, and actually like write it in your calendar and keep that commitment to yourself, because, you know, I think those commitments to ourselves are just as important as a meeting we have scheduled in with our boss or a meeting we have scheduled in with a major donor. We need to start honoring those commitments we make to ourselves and giving them equal value as we would to either of those other examples.
Yeah. And so for you, what would be a couple of ways that you would do that? Like during a work day, what would you do to recharge?
That's a great question. So I, for example, I have my schedule publicly available online for a couple afternoons a week. So I make sure that there's always a 15-minute buffer between those calls. So I typically won't allow, it's a tech thing that I've done that my calendar will not allow meetings to be booked without a little bit of buffer time in between. So that's good for me, just even in terms of, again, reflect, like pausing a meeting, reflecting, you know, maybe taking notes if I need to, you know, taking a quick reflection break, getting a cup of tea, but like actually like building that kind of thing into your work processes, if you can, always makes a lot of sense. For me, I also, you know, during the pandemic started running. So I schedule into my calendar at the beginning of the week, typically like 3 runs in the week. And so that's already in my calendar. Nothing can mess with it. So yeah, those are a few things that I do, but I definitely practice what I preach in terms of using time blocking and using my calendar, and trying to honor my commitments to myself doesn't always work, but being, you know, one thing I've been talking a lot about lately is being, aiming for progress instead of perfection. So knowing that I am not always going to get to what I schedule into my calendar, but to celebrate the fact that I have made some progress at the end of the week and honor the commitment to myself to take breaks and to recharge, that's really important too.
Yeah, nice. Any final thoughts, Margaret?
No, lots to think about. Thank you for being with us today, Emma, and for this great perspective.
Thanks for having me. It's been a fun conversation.
Yes. So we're gonna take on that. I love that idea of the time in between. I think that could be life changing for people just not scheduling their meetings. Margaret,
I'm like, can I do that on my Acuity? I think I'm gonna actually, the minute we get off this call, I'm gonna see if I can change those settings.
Something Margaret said to me the other day, I'm like, that might be life changing for the person on my team who's here with me today. So remember to try that. We're gonna ask you to try and build in those recharge breaks during your work week and be very intentional. And even if you can, do that before the other meetings get scheduled in. So thank you so much, Emma, for joining us again. And it sounds like you're going to be back soon because there's lots more to talk about. And meanwhile, we want to offer our resource for the week. And we thought it would be nice to link to our 7-day coaching challenge because introvert, extrovert, ambivert, as Emma said, one of the important things that you want to do as a fundraiser is make sure that you're paying more attention to your listening skills. And coaching is a great way to get there. So we will see you all again soon. This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the show, you can help us continue to bring thoughtful content with a monthly or annual contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. Make a contribution today using the link in the show notes. Now, go put it into practice.